Please be seated. It's great to be with you today. We've probably all had this experience. That is, if you drive a car or maybe just walking down the sidewalk. But if you've been driving a car in the Victoria area, you get into a left turn lane. And there at the light stands somebody ravaged by life, by drugs, by illness, by having to live rough every day. Sometimes all of the above, maybe most of the time, all of the above. And they're asking for help, for money. Probably, we may think, so they can take their next hit. And in those cases, it's extremely difficult to withhold judgment, either of them or of a system or family that has contributed to their present state. I find myself caught. Do I give them money or not? Most of the time I don't, sometimes I do. Do I avert my eyes? I often do. Or do I look straight at them and humanize myself and them with a genuine smile? Do I roll down my window and say hi and make some comment, as I'm wont to do, about the weather? Or do I just keep my window rolled up and keep listening to the same old bad news that seems on endless repeat these days? Never do I feel more like the priest who walks right on by the Samaritan man in the ditch than at these moments. I feel shame, helplessness, and exasperation all at the same time. For I know there is no easy solution to this scourge that is the ongoing horror movie playing out all around us. These experiences give me some sympathy for the disciples in today's reading. Just getting to the land of the Gerasenes has been a fraught affair. They just experienced violent waves on the Sea of Galilee so severe that the boat was filling with water and all of them, they felt, were in mortal danger. Jesus has been sleeping in the boat, as cool as a cucumber. On a side note, maybe a side question, no extra charge, why is a cucumber considered cool anyway? And when awakened, Jesus makes the sea as cool and calm as he is. I imagine the disciples would have been shaken, afraid, and of course awed as they step out onto land. But they didn't have time to process. For the minute they do so, there he is in their faces, a man screaming at them. They're hardly able to take in the bizarreness of his appearance because they're probably covering their faces in self-protection. At any second, the blows might start raining down, or so they may imagine. As I imagine this scene in our gospel, I'm remembering, superimposed upon this scene, are the faces of several men and several women who used to scream at me outside of St. Thomas Chilliwack, a downtown church with a large unhoused population around it. And usually this was after I had to call the police because they were emptying their bowels in and around our building. On the shore, Jesus addresses this out-of-control man calmly, yet firmly. We have a knowledge that a dialogue has been taking place. It's a dialogue that must have been bizarre because it was with the unnatural voices that are coming from this man, and Jesus is able to discern the cause of his condition. Somehow Jesus is able to discern how this man has come to identify with his broken condition rather than the name he grew up with. I realize in superimposing my experience on this story that unhoused, fentanyl dependent, severe mental health crisis, well, these are our equivalents for legion. And that each of these conditions reflect serious social breakdown, now manifested in people, in individuals. We remember that it was the Roman legions that were the cause of so much poverty, so much breakdown in the society at the time. And I realize that Jesus does not avert his eyes, as I so often do. It's as if his humanizing of the person enables him to expose the name, the cause of the brokenness. Weirdly, and so differently than the way I would like to do it, he does not propose a large-scale solution, nor does he blame the man, something I'm very prone to do. Good stories and good teachers don't tell, they show, and Jesus is the shower. What are we being shown? I recall a memory from university, intro, psych, or something. The famous experiment done in the 1970s in which a rat is placed in a cage and allowed to choose between plain water and water laced with cocaine or heroin. And how the rat inevitably, 100% of the time, chose the drug-laced water, becoming, in a matter of days, a dead rat. But when rats were placed in what was the equivalent of a rat park, with plenty of cheese, color, things to climb, and most crucially, other rats, the rats never drank the drug-laced water. They thrived. What are we being shown? The man in this story, people now around us, well, they're in cages. People who are often utterly alone, isolated, not physically so much. Often they are, in fact, in constant danger from other people around them. Rather, they are psychically and spiritually bereft, empty, alone. And then the counterintuitive ending to our story. When Jesus heals this isolated, broken man, You'd think that all of the people in the town would be happy. How wonderful. But the people aren't grateful. They're afraid. Afraid because their complicity in keeping the man chained has just been exposed. And interestingly, Jesus doesn't blame them either. They're just probably doing the best they can, trying to manage a difficult, as they imagine it, dangerous situation. And so my sympathies are actually with politicians and bureaucrats and others who are trying to help with what's going on around us, healthcare officials. The people are afraid, and they're afraid because it has just been revealed that there are no throwaway human beings. And the resulting cost to addressing all people, broken or otherwise, with respect, with hope, and with genuine healing will mean that their resources, their vision for society will need to change. Jesus' stories are always good news, but not straightforwardly so. Society is challenged, we're challenged, the status quo is challenged, my view of the person in front of me is challenged. In Jesus' stories, social and human conditions are named for what they are, without blame. And the implication is, partner with God until no one is in a cage, and this earth becomes a park in which all its inhabitants can have a picnic. I don't have political or even spiritual answers, truly, I don't. As the disciples didn't in the scenario before them. But I know this, in the heart of that person running among the tombs, in the heart of the person before me at the intersection is a cry from our psalm. Why have you forgotten me? And why do you go so heavily while the enemy oppresses me? Why are you so full of heaviness, O my soul? And why are you so disquieted within me? Once freed by a love, I freely admit to not understanding yet. This man is given a voice, a new possibility. Jesus gives him the purpose that society had denied him. Nothing has changed our understanding of humanity more than stories like this, the Jesus stories. Nothing has revealed how much needs to be done more than the Jesus stories. To the intransigent human realities that seem beyond hope, these stories persist in their questioning. They speak to us of the hope of God, the power of Christ, and as such they call to us over the centuries. Not with answers per se, but from a world not yet realized. This morning I pulled up to the left turn that I take every Sunday morning just after 7 a.m., corner of Hillside and Pat Bay Highway. And there he was. His name's Jason. We had a little conversation this morning, and today he was there by himself. There's no vehicles behind me, so I felt the freedom to have more of an interchange. I gave him some money and asked him if he'd received one of the socks, the sock project that we had put together here at St. Philip. And he said, yes, thank St. Philip. And then he said, can you pray for me this morning? I said, sure, absolutely, Jason. We will pray for you this morning. And then he looked at me and he said, it's hard to even say. He said, never give up hope. It's pretty amazing, pretty moving. God bless you, Jason.